Yeah, you ready? Let's do it.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Final Play Podcast. This week's round 14 of the NRL. We probably should have started with the theme song for MASH.
True.
It's possible we should have started with that song, but
there's plenty of teams that are resembling the casualty ward from there. So it's there's obviously more than others, but it's looking very very thin at the moment at some clubs.
Well, we'll start with the glaring clubs, I suppose. The first Thursday night game was the Storm getting over the Roosters 24-6. The Storm without Cameron Smith and without the two Camerons, Cameron Munster as well. But, man, they got it done through Jerome Hughes.
Oh, my God. It was the Jerome Hughes show. That's one of the best games I've seen him play. Like, he's only small in stature, but, man, when he can take over a game like that. Yeah, that just proves his worth, you know, and he's a makeshift halfback as well, you know, sort of come into first grade as a fullback, and I'm pretty sure he's represented New Zealand as a fullback as well.
Yeah, correct. And I think, I don't know, the way I looked at it, like, it's Cameron Smith, but just looking when Cameron Smith retires, and if that's this year, Jerome's fine with the boot. I mean, Riley Jackson, a little bit of the kicking duties, but Jerome Hughes, you know, he ended up only getting 500 kicking meters, which is pretty rare in a game, really. I mean, he was pretty much the only kicker, but god damn, like,
thing too, when you come into, you know, it just depends on the quality of your side as well. We've talked about teams, how they only have one chief playmaker and they don't sort of reside to the 5'8" or vice versa a lot, and you have to funnel a lot towards one player, a la, you know, someone like a North Queensland Cowboys and Michael Morgan or Manly and a Daly Cherry Evans. But it just goes to show that you even with, you know, the proper structures there, then you can still get away with a dominant player where most of your kicking duties get funneled through him. And the funny thing was too, like, you know, the Brandon Smith 40-20. Was essentially a right-footed Cameron Smith. Like, that was it. Just it was just on the other side of the field with the other boot. Like, that was unbelievable.
It looked so similar.
Except just, with the right boot.
I mean, if Cameron Smith's going to retire or possibly move to another club, this will be the right year, because the way Brandon Smith's playing, you've got Harry Grant more than likely coming back. You know, they're pretty stocked, Melbourne.
As they have been for a lot of years now. Like, wow. They've always had not so much good depth, but they've always used the depth to their advantage, and the people that they bring in and have, you know, running around, you know, in the lower grades, always come into first grade and generally, you know, shine in their position and do their job.
Yeah. There was pretty even the game in terms of both sides had enough possession. It was the Roosters' completion rate that really, really let them down. They only end up getting 66%.
Well, that's been their problem. That's been their problem all year. They've got one of the worst completion rates in the league. They're like 14th, you know, out of 16 teams for completion rates over the course of the year. I think the only two teams that are worse are the Cronulla and the Gold Coast. That's a glaring hole for them. That's right. That's, I mean, and it's been a problem. And that's not a new problem that's arised. Like, that's been a problem for them all year.
The other thing that I guess stood out in that game, except for the scoreline, was someone like Addo Carr, for a winger, he sort of stepped up when there was obviously senior sort of players out, and he every time he touched a ball, it looked like he broke through twice. He just could broke that line pretty easily, and it's probably just genuine speed.
Well, that's it. It's one of those uncoachable intangibles, isn't it? Is good old fashioned speed. You can't coach it, and that's just what he's got. look, you know, like we sort of alluded to earlier, that both teams suffered a number of injuries. You know, Keary took sort of an innocuous shot to the ribs, and he looked like he'd been shot. He got rushed to hospital. They feared that he'd had some sort of internal injuries or anything.
Like organ damage, they were talking.
Yeah.
It was
just turns out that it was just a fracture in a fractured rib in two places, and it just must have been uber painful. They lost Orbison. He's got a strained ligament in his wrist. So he's done for a little while. Lockie Lamb has gone as well with that high ankle sprain. So Melbourne has got a few injuries as well.
Yeah, so they've lost Jerome Hughes by the looks of it. It hasn't been confirmed yet, but he's considered unlikely. So is Cameron Smith at the moment. We just talked about it before we got on the pod, but the coaches in the post press conference said that it's turning into a mass unit because of the speed of the play at the moment. Everyone's not used to it, so they're having a lot of ankle and leg injuries.
Well, we talked about it right at the start of the year when they brought this rule in. A lot of games now are approaching state of origin speed. It's not sustaining for the whole game, which is just that's just ludicrous that can happen. But there's more periods now than ever before where the speed of the game and the speed of the ruck is that fast. Just your regular, everyday Joe first grader, and they're terrific athletes, but they just simply can't keep up. And that's all well and good. Yeah, okay, they might get used to it, but then again, they might not. Like, we've been going since the restart now for a while now. Like, we've been going for 3 months since the restart. If they're not conditioned to it now, they're never going to be.
No, that's true. And, I mean, in that game alone, there were six players that went down. The three you mentioned in the Roosters, Finucane's gone for the year with a calf injury. And Vunivalu broke his jaw.
He broke his jaw. So, those injuries happened.
That's still six injuries in one game. The Roosters
The point I'm trying to make is that when you're under fatigue, and that's the key word here, and that's what everybody wants is fatigue. We all want fatigue. You make poor decisions under fatigue. So you're putting your body, whether it's making a tackle, whether it's making a hit up, whether it's doing those things that you're used to doing, and you're normally under a little bit of duress, but when you're pushing the body so far, you get into bad positions and you get into bad habits that you just can't shake. I think some of these injuries are being amplified by that.
Speaking of the Roosters, the other thing that came out, not of that game, I guess during the week, was Boyd Courtney's, that head knock that he had, he's still having concussion issues. It's possible he might not even come back this year or possibly at all. Like, they're seriously not worried, but he's having huge issues after that head knock.
It's one of those complications where it's one of those things with concussions. Different people react to it and recover from it in different ways. And if he's had a few in the last couple of seasons, which I'm not sure he's had, but he's
in that game, he did.
He's just one of those guys that just puts it all on the line.
Yeah.
And I just can't think of the game off the top of my head. It basically cost them the game when he got up.
It was the first Melbourne game.
It was the Melbourne Roosters. Yeah, and he was dazed. He should have just stayed on the ground, but he got up and tried to play the ball, dropped it, and then pretty much fell over.
Yeah,
and that was and he hasn't been seen since.
No, and so I don't know when he's going to come back. Just finishing on that Thursday game. I guess the two Camerons out, the goal kicking duties went to Ryan Pappenhausen, and he looks pretty handy with the boots.
He looks pretty competent in most things he does. So I guess the new chosen one at the Storm.
Oh my god, he's having a weird season already, but yeah, he did do that field goal. He's only 22 years old, so huge future ahead of him. But yeah, pretty much what you said about Melbourne. It's been like this for 10, 12 years that it doesn't matter who sort of plays there. Craig Bellamy will find a way to get the best out of him. Christian Welch, since he's been there, has been phenomenal. So it's crazy what he can sort of get out of a player. It's ridiculous.
Well, it's seen. He's essentially the new generation Wayne Bennett, really. He just knows his players. He knows their capabilities, what they can do, and is able to bring that out of them and to give them that confidence. You know, obviously the structures and everything they have in place, their game plan, all that sort of stuff that Craig Bellamy sort of brings as a coach. You know, that obviously helps as well. But it's just it's the perfect combination.
The next game was the first Friday game. It was the Panthers just getting over the Warriors 18-12. I don't know. I caught sort of the back end of this. No, sorry, the front end of this game. And I sort of thought after halftime, I thought the Panthers were going to run away with it, but I was completely wrong.
Look, to me, all it felt like, especially in that first half, was all that the Warriors did was tackle. Like that's all that felt like they did. Like they were just under the pump constantly. Once again, Penrith getting off to a fairly hot start. To New Zealand's credit, fight back, stay in the contest, even though they were sort of grossly outmatched, especially possession wise. I think it was, 58-42 possession wise. So literally with no ball, in a fairly ordinary completion rate, 73%. The Panthers completed 88%. So, when they had the ball, they were good with it. But they just couldn't put them away. Like all their point scoring was done in the first half, and all there was a penalty goal in the second half. I think it was a little bit of a dire second half.
Yeah.
The Warriors missed 49 tackles to Penrith 9. I think that was a really sort of telling stat.
Yeah.
And I thought Penrith did a really good job to hold them out for probably the last 12, 15 minutes. New Zealand were on the attack, and they just couldn't get through. Like Penrith's been pretty solid defensively this year.
Yeah. I mean, they are, I guess, flexing their premiership muscles. I just thought they were going to run away with that game, so it was probably more full credit for the Warriors to sort of, I guess, not let them pour more points on them. But like you just said, it was ended up being a dire sort of second half.
It was a little bit, but the other funny thing about it too was that Penrith forced 10 dropouts on them, so it eventually just takes its toll. That's just making them tackle, tackle so much that they simply just couldn't. There was no way that they were going to be able to keep up with that.
Unfortunately, in that game, there was alleged racial abuse towards Brent Naden, who looked clearly, I guess, looked a bit dejected, sort of during and after the game. I mean, it looks.
I think it shook him up a little bit. There's no sort of real reports about what was actually said. Eight, just buffoons in the crowd. Like, I just don't understand. Like why you would do that in the first place, and how in the hell they thought they were ever going to get away with it with the limited amount of people there, and you can just hear absolutely everything. So you just don't need that crap in the game, anywhere in society. Cooper Cronk put that best. I think it was during halftime. It's just like you just don't need it, and that they're just 100% not welcome in the rugby league community whatsoever. If doing that sort of garbage is just not on. It's just not on.
Well, it's possible. I know a lot of senior analysts, like Andrew Johnson, example, are calling for life bans because it's not on. In any facet of life, it isn't on. Like, you know, you're there, you pay money to watch a game, just and then what, you want to go in and abuse someone? I don't get it at all.
No, that's right. Just because you paid money to go there and have a seat and there's just things in society that you don't do and that's just one of them. Just because you paid money doesn't give you the right do any of that. Like it's obviously it happens in the AFL. You know, they're super close. To the crowd there. It happened in the NBA with Russell Westbrook and Utah and Utah doesn't have the greatest reputation for that sort of thing.
No.
But it's just Russ, he wasn't taken at all. So it also just depends on how you react to it as well. So hopefully he stays strong and I know the club will be behind him with everything that he does. So you know hopefully he can shake this off and like we said, that's just rubbish that just doesn't need to happen.
And it's full credit to all the players as well. Like all the players you just mentioned that have been abused, you know, these aren't small guys. These are big guys.
Oh, God, no. That's what I mean.
So it'll be the last person. I mean, you wouldn't do it at all, but, you know, especially not to people like athletes, athletes.
They snap you like a twig.
So it's not called for anywhere, especially in sports. I mean, yeah, exactly. Because there's kids around as well. And the kids
support your team. Like, you know, you just don't need that sort of rubbish. And, you know, both teams have put out statements about it and everything, which is, you know, sort of par for the course on how they do things now. So that's, you know, hopefully that there's footage out there and there's audio out there of these guys doing it and just piss them off for life.
The last Friday night game was the Dragons. It was Mary McGregor's last coaching game, actually. So the Dragons got the last win for him over the Eels, 14-12.
What did you think of that? They sacked him throughout the week, but they still allow him to coach this past Friday night. I thought that was
it's an interesting. I knew he got sacked during the week. I didn't expect to see him there.
No,
I wasn't really paying attention to it. And then when the game, and I said, what the hell's he doing there? Oh,
that's right. Like, yeah, they sort of really didn't mention a whole lot of it about there. And then all of a sudden there was camera shots and there he is sitting on the sideline. And you're like, why was he sitting on the sideline with a headset?
So, yeah, he coached his final game. He got him a win and, you know, looked pretty emotional right at the end there when all the players sort of hugged him. But which is interesting for that, like for the fact of, like, he clearly didn't lose it, or for looking at it, didn't lose the dressing room. But
look, they've been better over the last month or so. Like, absolutely, they've been better.
We were ripping them to shreds at the start of the year. More Ben Hunt and everything. But then when they threw it on McGregor and then they said, well, there'll be four of you that'll pick the squad, they got better, I thought. I mean, they had losses, but they definitely got better.
Well, it looked like they had the right combination there with Ben Hunt going to nine, but obviously injury is sort of has forced their hand a little bit. But now Adam Clune's back, so Corey Norman is back in flavour after what, 1 week of being out. Like, it's just, I don't know. I don't know what sort of message that sends to your players. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was a funny old game too. Like,
it was.
It was just like after the Gutherson early try, I think it was 12 or 13th minute. It just sort of, it was just a just drag them down, grind it out sort of game. And even though the Dragons sort of come back and sort of hit back later on in the half, and you know, it sort of did well once again. You know, the fight back. There's a lot of teams that would sort of shut up shop after, you know, an early try, and okay, fair enough, it happened after 2 minutes into the first half, and Kane Evans essentially just strolls over and plants the ball right next to the sticks. They tried to get themselves back into it a couple of penalty goals late, but it just St George just looked like that. Not so much they had their number, but I sort of looked at it as Parramatta only being down two were very impatient.
Yeah, well,
they were very impatient
when they were down two, because that was pretty much that sort of that whole sort of second half. It was pretty much that whole second half that there was no more points after sort of that Kane Evans try, like you said. So they were extremely impatient.
A couple of penalty goals to the Dragons, and you know that put them ahead. Jeez, I thought they were unlucky too with the Reed Marnie no try. I don't know if you sort of caught a glimpse of that. There was never going to be a great angle to see whether or not there was any chalk on the ball.
But I think it
went up as a no try. So, and looking at it at normal speed, it looked like he 100% planted on the line.
Yeah, and that's exactly.
But when you look at it in slow motion, I think it could have gone either way. Like I'm not sure what you thought of it, but I just. Whatever the referee's decision was what it was going to be.
It was too inconclusive, but again, purely because like it looked like it touched the line, so you sort of had to go with what you had, and it wasn't conclusive enough to be a try. That was my only observation of it. No, that's right,
because it was sent up the one way that they had. I think they just had to stick with it. Like there was not enough evidence to sort of suggest that there was, that he had sort of planted it down inside. I guess that's a little that was a little unlucky for them.
Because
that obviously would have changed the game a lot. But and good on St. George for getting the W.
It was really interesting that they did, because I thought the Dragons were going to win. They had the most tackle breaks by over half of what Parramatta had. But Parramatta's run meters were phenomenal. Like, I mean, look at Clinton Gutherson. Nearly got 400 meters, 369 meters. All the forwards were over 100 meters. Nearly the whole bench was. I don't know what let them down. Like in that game, they were there. They clearly, obviously, just couldn't get over the line.
Yeah, a few people. So, and you can sort of see that they're in a little bit of a funk, I guess, at the moment, Parramatta. They're not sailing as well as what they have been earlier, and that was always going to happen. Like a lot of these teams, it could have happened to Penrith sooner or later, where they sort of get a little bit of a dose of reality, and they don't show up one week, and that's the loss. I guess the term would be the loss that they need to have. Is this the loss that Parramatta needs to have 6 weeks out from the finals? To sort of get their head back in the game. I've been saying it all year. Are some of these teams peaking too early? And I thought Parramatta might have been one of those teams.
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, the top three are locked up regardless, so they could change positions. But from the four to the eight, that could be anybody. Anybody could jump into the fourth position. But so the Eels theoretically can't go lower than third anyway, by the looks of it. So it's possible. You're right. It's probably not a bad loss to sort of shape them up to get them prepared for the finals.
Just a shake. That's what I mean. You just need that little bit of a shake up, because the last thing you want is, a couple of bad performances right before the finals. So you get down in the dumps a little bit, confidence is lost, and then all of a sudden it's two losses and you're gone.
Next game, the first Saturday game was, and I completely listened to all this on the radio. I know you watched it. The Sharks beat the Titans 30-18. I guess we may as well start with the obvious thing. The Kevin Proctor alleged bite, and he was the first sent off since, was it 2015?
Apparently nobody's been sent off for a bite before. But I think I heard them say on the call on Fox, I think there was, I can't remember if they said 2019 or 2018, it was Nick Kotrick was sent straight from the field for a bad, dangerous throw. I think it might have been last year. So that was the last just straight up send off.
Yeah.
Which was long ago. But it generally takes something fairly nasty. And look,
I say, okay, well, before you get into it, so all I heard was what I heard on the radio. I did see the replays. I didn't see it live like you, so have at it.
Look, for me, all I say of it is both players. Yeah, they're good. They're good team. Oh, yeah, they're obviously New Zealand teammates. So they're supposedly good friends. Sean Johnson got up and basically said the effer bit me. when you look at the replay, for me, a bite is when you chomp down on something. That is a bite. Yeah. This, it goes against. It goes against what the popular opinion of it is. Everybody says it's obvious it's a bite. To me, it's just not obvious it's a bite. He has his mouth open. Sean Johnson's forearm is right across his mouth. He would have felt the bottom row of his teeth on his arm.
He did not bite
down on his arm. I don't give a shite what anybody says. He did not bite down on his arm. He had his mouth open and his forearm was right in it.
And his front teeth were out, so I agree. You can't tell from the bottom
teeth. He's got a mouth guard on, so you're not going to feel the top of his mouth. He would have felt the bottom row of his teeth there, exactly. But he's making a strong tackle and his arm was right in his mouth. He did not bite down on his arm. He just simply didn't.
It's funny then what you... If you're right, like to me, a bite's a distinguishing bite. There was
when you take a bite out of an apple, you have to chomp into it.
So what would you
stick? You don't just stick your mouth around it and that's it. You've got to bite into it.
And that's funny. Like I guess the reason I'm finding it funny is then what else do you call it? Because it wasn't. I didn't see on the replays. They didn't show that he had any marks on there, which is interesting.
So, and that's another thing. That's a lot of them will go up to him and will go up to the referee and go, "Here, look, there's teeth marks."
Yeah.
And even after the game, Sean Johnson was real coy about it. You know, in the post game sort of interview that he had, he didn't really want to elaborate on it. Didn't want to go into it too much. Just wanted to keep saying that, "Yep, we're good mates," and we talked it out afterwards. I honestly don't think he's got a whole lot to answer for at the judiciary because he simply didn't bite him.
I agree that he didn't bite him because of what I've seen. I just don't know about the whole judiciary thing about what he's got to answer for because it depends what precedents are out there. That's the problem. There's going to be certain precedents that are going to be out there, and it depends how the Titans are going to fight the case.
No, you're right, and apparently, like they said, that they're going to go out there and fight tooth and nail, and they've said we're going to fear he's going to fight it to the death. So I think that's a little bit strong way to go about it.
But it essentially
turned a close game. It was 12-all.
Yeah,
and both teams were in the struggle. Yeah. Of the game, and it essentially won them the game for Cronulla.
It did.
Like three tackles later, they scored.
And they scored again three minutes later. Yeah.
And they just couldn't, the Gold Coast just couldn't match up after that. Just couldn't go with them.
No, yeah, I agree. That was a huge turning point of the game because they just poured on tries straight after it. It was ridiculous how many tries they poured on after
You know, it's not going your way when there's a charge down for a try. Things aren't going your way like after that. So I think it was Will Kennedy was the one that scored the try for Cronulla. But once again, another game that sort of had a few injuries in it as well. Dale Copley doesn't look like a ruptured pec, but it looks like a really, really, really bad strain. So his season could be dusted by the looks of that.
Yeah.
Jai Arrow's got a fairly nasty AC joint injury, so he's done for a little while. And Sean Johnson looks like he may have done something to his groin. So they're nasty injuries too, groin injuries. Oof.
Because the groins are nasty is because they could, there's no real time frame of when they're good because they could go at any time, and you can't really assess. You only have to go off with the player. It's not like it's
It's essentially on the player.
Exactly.
If they can go out there and do what they can, but it just takes. It's like most injuries, but just especially with that, it just takes. It's on the player how he can come back to I guess sort of normal duties, as a football player.
How massive is that unit? CSF Taliaki. He is just a monster looking player. He's not tall. He's the same height as me. But goddamn, that neck has to be. He weighs 100 kilos. That neck has to be 40 of it. It's ridiculous. Oh,
thick. That's it. Yeah, just thick.
But you're right. That was the turning point of the game. And then Sharks ran away with the 30-18. Clearly, it was a turning point of the game. Unfortunately,
The goalpost sort of got a little snipe try in the last 10 minutes to sort of I guess give a little bit of respectability to the scoreline. Jack Williams, sorry, not Will. Jack Williams, not Will Kennedy. Sorry, Will Kennedy, I think, is playing at fullback for them at the moment. It's good to see sort of Moylan getting around and being sort of injury free, and he's going to have a lot of responsibility on his shoulders now that if Johnson doesn't play in the coming weeks.
Mm. Yeah, exactly right. It'll be very, very interesting because Johnson, I thought it's coming into a little bit of form.
He's starting to play really well.
Yeah.
This is the best he's looked in a Cronulla jumper. Absolutely. Yeah.
I think he's starting to roll really into good form. So,
that's very unfortunate for him.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, again, like you said, there was a few more injuries in that. So it'll be, has he been confirmed of if he's going to play or there's no sort of time frame yet?
I don't think there's a time frame put on there, but it's just
a groin too big.
It's just groin and also
and Dugan as well.
Surprise. Josh Dugan's hurt again. I think he just got like a little, I think it was just a knee to knee cork.
Yeah.
So that's par for the course for Josh Dugan. Last year was probably the healthiest year he's had. So, I guess that's all sort of coming around full circle, I guess, for him. So they're not expected to have Chad Townsend back for another couple of weeks either. So is it the young kid Connor Tracy? I think he would step straight into that halfback role. So
it's possible,
I think that would be the logical choice for them to put, to put back into that halfback role, but I guess we'll have to wait and see until when the teams are named and what they decide to do.
The next game that I fully did watch, because I believe you couldn't watch it, the Cowboys they can't seem to win at their new stadium. But anyway, unfortunately, they went down.
Oh, they can't.
31-30 in a very entertaining game against the Rabbitohs. This is a very entertaining game.
There were some nail biters this weekend. This one for me obviously was probably the biggest of the nail biters. Look, I definitely didn't see 61 points total coming out of this game. You can't put, if you want to put it simply, it just simply come down to goal kicking.
Yeah, that's exactly what it came
down to. That's a simple way to
Colin, exactly, because Cole felt, you can tell after that third kick, he just was having a rotten day.
Oh, he was right
with the boot, and
he strikes them so sweet. It's just his radar is all over the place. Like he's probably got one of the worst kicking percentages in the league at the moment. Like him and Moses Emboli both kick under 70%. I think Ash Taylor's, I think his career is under 70%, but he's kicking a little better this year. But they're one of the worst, converting teams going around at the moment. And they've essentially, the other goal kicking option was Valentine Holmes. And obviously he's not there.
They except for the kicking letting down, I thought they deserved to win that game because they were playing brilliantly on the back of, it's only two games in, but Michael Morgan had a wow of a game that game. He ran the ball, which is always good to see Michael Morgan run the ball, hence why he got his two tries. They, Yeah, they this
that
definitely
second drive was just pure muscle.
Yeah,
that was just all, that was just there was just muscle.
They deserve to win it on the back of the way they're playing. It was just, I guess, the little untimely errors, especially right at that end when, I guess they gifted the ball back to South, and South got it. It took them 10, maybe 12 seconds to get down the other end for Adam Reynolds to slot the field goal.
No, that's right. That's what I mean. It was it was a diabolical last 5 minutes.
Yeah,
it was the Granville error, and it was running through my head. Just don't do anything stupid. Don't drop the ball, and don't give away any penalties. And it was pretty much as soon as I sort of said that, Granville dropped the ball pretty much on halfway. That leads to the Johnston try.
Yeah,
this South made so much easy meterage. It was was ridiculous.
Yeah,
absolutely ridiculous how easy they made it look running through North Queensland. Like that, the Cowboys had 57% of possession. Like that sort of game just should not happen.
But no, that's exactly right.
Even run meters, you know, with 20 odd less runs, they just made it look so easy. And then the penalty, you know, it was the gift. You know, Reynolds is pretty good with the boot. He misses the conversion. They go down the other end. They make the meters look so easy getting down the other end. And just a stupid penalty on the fifth tackle by Kyle Feld reaching in. They challenged it. It was pretty obvious that he was reaching in for the ball. Yep. You know, he slots that, makes it 30 all. And then once again, they just rumble down the field.
They really did. It took them 10 seconds.
I can't think of that. Totola. He ran 20 meters backwards with three Cowboys hanging off him.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
And that set up the field goal. He ran 20 meters backwards. It was unbelievable.
I still don't think Scotty Drinkwater, I don't think, is still very comfortable at fullback. He played a lot.
I was going to say, don't underestimate him being back and, you know, having him at fullback. I think
he has defensive lapses, but because that first try,
he was up in the line of defense.
That's right. But I was always taught as a fullback that you do never play up on the line unless obviously they're right on the line, and they weren't on the line.
A lot of teams are doing that now.
I don't get it. Like Reynolds had to do was put his look up, but he looked up and it was a brilliant kick.
I've got a funny feeling that's a Wayne Bennett initiative. That I think he brought that. I think he sort of started to do that a few years ago.
I mean, the whole point of it is creates because, you know, you can create, especially when the ball is played, you can create that extra person to have in defense. Sure. But if they can get that ball away and that halfback looks up,
they can get the ball through the line, then you're screwed. And that's what happened.
You can play on the line if they were that close. You can play all on the line, but I don't know. He was 20 meters back, and
he went in untouched. But through sheer weight of possession, the amount that North Queensland had, a little bit of poor execution, especially at the start of the game. Yeah, they had three dropouts in a row, a couple of set restarts in a row, and it only sort of it led to a try. Okay, well and good, but I guess they sort of didn't really tire South out enough. The Drinkwater chip for Tabuai Fidow was awesome. That's the play of the game, and that should be up there for one of the tries of the year. That was insane. I had no idea what in the hell he thought he was doing, and then you see the hammer just run through, take the ball. It's just like, oh, cool, he's going to score a try.
It wasn't so much the try, which is obviously because of his speed was phenomenal. It was the kick. The precision kick was
awesome. It was just pinpoint accurate.
Yeah, it was really.
If that goes out, if that's a meter in front of him, then it's one of the biggest bonehead plays that you'll see going around. But that's what I mean. That's just one of those picture perfect situations where it happened. You know, it come off, but the Cowboys just let down a little bit by defense. You know, so, yeah, just. Well, defensively, but at least now that they look like they might have their mojo back a little bit scoring wise.
I think so. I mean, having Michael Morgan there seemed to he led that side like he did when they had that glorious run in the finals with their JT. That's what it looked like. I mean,
he is never ever going to recapture that sort of form again.
I agree. But I mean, and they're still missing a few pieces. Anyway, to be honest, it looked like he controlled, and it's only because he's just come back, but he controlled that team a lot better.
And I sort of said it last week there that, you know, Hampton, and he's a stopgap at 5'8". I think they're going to be a lot better if they decide to, whoever they decide to go with, you know, when Val comes back. I think he's due back in a couple of weeks, whether or not they're going to just slot him straight back at fullback. I'd like to see how the combination of Morgan and Drinkwater continues in the halves. That's how they started off the season. So, there's just questions will arise once players start to get healthy again. But, you know, that's one of the better performances they've put in this year. Just like I said, it looked like they got their mojo back a little bit attack-wise. So, once again, it's just defensive lapses. And just silly errors that had come in, simply put, if you knock one more conversion over, then it's a totally different game.
Oh, 100%. It would have been a completely different mindset and everything. So, the next game was the last Saturday game. The Raiders taking Broncos to the sword, 36-8.
Well, it's only in the second half. Like they,
yeah.
Once again,
which is typical Brisbane.
For 40 minutes, you know, Brisbane looked like a semi competent football team.
Yeah, no, you're right. I agree with that, and that it's happened to them all year. I mean, again, the other teams have run away with it, but their second half lapses are just ridiculous.
Well, it's happened a couple of times this year, just second halves.
It's happened a lot this year. If that's the case, because it has happened a lot, that goes down to leadership, and that's what they're lacking.
You're right. You tend to agree with what a lot of people are saying. It's a young squad. There's no real leadership. Like we said, was it last week, that Darius Boyd, I'd said it at the start of the year, he was just there to collect a paycheck. Like, you know, he was dumped as captain, so he'd have a bee in his bonnet about that. Mm-hmm. You know, Dad Wayne Bennett is down in Sydney, so he'd have a bee in his bonnet about that. Now he doesn't want any part of the leadership group. So he is 100% there collecting a paycheck and just waiting for these next 6 weeks to tick by so he can retire.
You're right. That's exactly right. But just because the players, he should be stepping up. There's a couple other players that should be sort of stepping up. But just because a player is young, I've seen young players that can step up for leadership roles very early on. And it completely changes them. But I just don't think they have that because they are. Their second half lapses are ridiculous. They are playing great.
No.
Up until the second half.
No, exactly. And look, I think they lost a little. They sort of became a little bit rudderless after Turpin went out. I think he's got a broken hand, Jake Turpin. So, you know, once again, the injury bug's bitten him. So, he's one of those guys that looks like he could be a little bit of a difference maker but just can't stay healthy. They sort of look a little bit rudderless. Like the young, is he Corey Pakes? He's sort of come in and they're sort of making excuses for him. You know, he hasn't not used to playing these kind of minutes and things like that. And it's like that's all well and good. But, you know, when they're under a little bit of duress and a little bit of pressure, they just seem to just all the air just goes out of goes out of the balloon.
Exactly.
And
right.
It essentially looks like they're playing for themselves. And there's zero communication defensively.
Yeah. No, that's exactly the best way to put it. That's because that's how they are playing. Look, and then on the flip side, obviously Raiders, they did beat out lowly Brisbane, but they played well. they did everything right, especially in, I guess, in that sort of second half.
Well, five tries in 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that's enough to burst anyone's bubble. But, they come out at halftime, I guess, sort of a different side. Like, they looked not so much flat, but, you know, Brisbane sort of looked like that they were rattling them a little bit, how resistant they were on their own try line. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that Canberra sort of expected that. But once again, yeah, I thought George Williams was instrumental, you know, in that game. Bateman is looking better the more he's starting to play, coming back from injury. So, you know, that's helping them as well.
Yeah.
So, it looked like a bitterly cold night down there in Canberra. Once again, how the hell can it get that cold by 9 o'clock at night? Like, it's just, I don't understand.
Yeah. It's interesting. Again, a second game in a row. Havali came off and only played sort of 40 minutes. I don't think they're sort of sold on who they want at the dummy half.
Really. No, it doesn't look like it.
So. But again, full credit. I mean, their back line was phenomenal. Everybody in that back line was great. Nick Kotrich was brilliant. But yeah, everybody in that back line was up to the task.
Yeah. Look, you know, since Rapana's sort of come back into the starting side after, you know, early on when he come back, he was sort of off the bench and everything. He's, you know, he's obviously slipped straight back into, into I guess top gear. You know, for him, you know, he's looking really good. Look, they've got some good young guys there as well. For me, as always, like, you know, Charles Nicol Klokstad is just he's a revelation for them at fullback. Like, I really like his game. And essentially come out of nowhere really a couple of years ago. So.
Yeah.
You know, and his run of good form just continues to roll on.
Next game was the first Sunday game. The Knights are getting over. Good win over the Manly, 26-24.
Another nail-biter. Like, two Sunday nail-biters.
Another game that they were fully, fully in control of. And, you know, Caelan missed two goals, but I felt like they were more in control of that game than Manly were. I know at the start,
they were in control after about probably the 17th or 18th minute. Mm-hmm. Like that, to me, they didn't come out of the change rooms at the start of the game. Like, Manly just come out and just went boom, boom, two tries in the first 10 minutes. And I think Newcastle just went, oh, what's happened here?
Yeah.
It just took them a little while to sort of get rolling and getting into the game. I think Manly just sort of took them by surprise at the start. Like, the two tries were pretty classy by Cust and by Cherry Evans. Cust looks like he's a tough customer. Like, I think he had an ankle injury, he had a knee injury, but he stayed on. You know, was still influencing the game in the second half. I'm pretty sure he set up the Gajewski try. He
looks good. I mean, unfortunately, Dylan Walker's, you know, out at the moment, but he looks good because they've tried a couple of combinations there for Cherry Evans.
Lock
and Croker didn't work.
I didn't think that experiment sort of worked very well, but Cade Cust has just sort of. And, you know, there was a couple of weeks ago that he was dropped from the team altogether. You know, and Dylan Walker, you know, played, what did he play, 12 minutes and was hurt. So he essentially has come straight back in, and I could only assume that he's going to play the rest of the season there at 5'8", as long as these injuries don't sort of come back and hold him out of the team. Once again, it's just a Manly side that won't die. And with the injuries that they've got at the moment, I think this is a bit of a lost season for them. I think there was a lot, not so much riding on this team, but, you know, with a full squad, yeah, they could have really pushed, yeah, they could have really pushed some of these bigger teams, you know, and these teams that are in form, like your Penriths, like your Parramattas, your Roosters, your Melbournes. I really think they could have.
They still have a chance. I mean, Depending. Look, Tommy Turbo should be back possibly next week, but it's or in the next couple of weeks. But and then there's also Martin Tapau to come back next week, and Joel Thompson to come back next week. So they still have legitimately have a chance. To possibly make the eight, and if they
They're near too far gone. I think
possibly.
They'd have to come on a bit of a hot streak. Like Brandon Elliott done his ACL in the first half. So until Trbojevic comes back, they're basically going to be on a third string halfback, string fullback. So that's not going to be terrific. Look, I'd like to see Danny Levi play more. I really like that signing. By them at the start of the year, I'd like to see him sort of, be a little bit more influential on the team. He's one of those guys, a la like a Damian Cook, I thought would really enjoy these faster games and have that had that impact out of dummy half.
Yeah.
He's been a little inconsistent there. I don't know if you've seen on it was on Instagram, Curtis Sirenin's tongue.
Yeah, I've seen it. Every time I look at the casualty ward, it's like it's the first thing that comes up. So
Curtis Sirenin tongue.
Yeah, and it's split. I mean, it's split in half.
Yeah, I think a lot of goth people would pay a lot of money to have a tongue like that.
I don't know. it's definitely split. And just on K Cuss, I think he's playing well at 5'8", and I think I like the fact of having a ball running 5'8" like him, so then Cherry Evans can do his thing with the ball
Terms of
win the offense.
It's the right combination. It's absolutely
what Dylan Walker did too, to an extent. So, it's unfortunate they are missing key players.
That's the thing. Their mass unit isn't as big, but the guys that they have missing are super influential to that team. So, that's the poor part about it. Look, Newcastle were great for 60 minutes. They couldn't sort of, shake them. They couldn't shake the Manly, the Manly heebie-jeebies a little bit, but they did enough to get the win. a couple of poor mistakes by Manly at the end, in the last couple of minutes with I think it was Moses Suli. He's running down the sideline and he gets caught with the ball and he gets thrown over the sideline and you're like, oh no. And it just that was just such a poor play. Like you just don't get towards the sideline. He was making good meters and then he gets dumped over the sideline and then they didn't end up getting a final sort of play. With Cade Cust dying with the ball as the full-time hooter sounds. Tried to sort of play a little bit of hero ball and hit the line. He should have just passed it straight out of dummy half. It was a bit silly at the end there. They really could have made Newcastle sweat a little bit more, with the more sort of, probing, last play at the end of the game.
The final game was the Tigers and the Bulldogs. The Tigers literally just getting that win. Then 3 minutes left, 29-28.
Look, that was just a game of ebbs and flows. That was just, mini avalanches one way of points.
Yeah.
It looked like the Tigers were really going to run away with it for a while there. I think they ended up being up 22-6 at one point.
Yeah,
and then Canterbury once again, just a team that's in good form but not getting the results that they so desire in getting the two competition points and putting the Broncos on the bottom of the ladder. That just blurted out. Sorry about that.
I'd love to see that. Out of all the teams in the world, I'd love to see that.
There's plenty of teams I like to see on the bottom of the ladder, but yeah, they're definitely up there. Anyway,
but you're right.
It was just one of those games that was really back and forth. Like both teams, when they had momentum, they took it with both hands and they made the opposition pay.
I think the biggest thing to me that let them down was there wasn't enough. influence, so to speak, from Kieran Foran. I thought Jack Cogger took over a fair bit of, I guess, the duties from Kieran Foran. He had the most kick meters. Kieran just sort of seemed lost again. Like, he's a streaky kind of player, I suppose. Like, he can tend to have brilliant games and then just become lost.
Yeah, and I think that the different halves combination, I think, as well, might have played a little bit of havoc with him. You know, like you said, with Jack Cogger coming in, you know, he's a former Knight, and he sort of got let go a couple of years ago, and he hasn't sort of really found his way into the first grade side there at Canterbury. He sort of, I guess, has just been called upon when there's been injuries. So, I didn't really rate him that much at Newcastle. He looked fairly. He had a couple of good games there alongside Mitchell Pearce, but he looked okay, I guess. But yeah, like you said, this has got to be, this has got to be Kieran Foran. This has got to be the kind of game that he sort of steps up once again. The big unit Ogden started for Canterbury, and Aidan Tolman left on the bench again. So I'm not sort of sure what games George Arliss is playing there with Aidan Tolman. Are they trying to show him the door? Are they saying, look, you know, this is what you're going to be? You know, he's off contract at the end of the year. Like, this is going to force him out the door. He can't afford to lose somebody like Aidan Tolman. He's been one of the better players in a Canterbury side that's been pretty ordinary the last few years.
Yeah, no, it comes across like that. It
befuddles me why they're doing that.
He'd be a kind of guy that I could see. I mean, you don't want it to happen, but he'd be a kind of guy that I'd say if they are sort of showing him the door, he'd flourish overseas in England. He'd get a decent paycheck.
I don't think he'd have trouble getting somebody here.
It depends how much money I'm saying. I mean, he's 32 next year, so it depends what kind of money he wants too. That could be the
that's
problem.
Fair enough.
I agree with you, because I love him. I reckon he's a great player. But and they clearly don't. I mean, maybe it's the age thing, I don't know. But you know, it'd be Trent Barrett sort of working behind the scenes. Who knows? We don't know how much influence he's having either. He might completely.
You know, in poor sides, and you know, just especially lately, like he's been one of their better players.
If I had a choice, if you know, especially he'd be on decent money, same as Kieran Foran. I'd be getting rid of Kieran Foran's money before Aidan Tolman's, 100%.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, you know, the more that Kieran Foran stays on stays healthy and stays on the field, I think they're going to roll with him more than what they will Aidan Tolman.
Possible,
which is unfortunate, I think.
But Kieran Foran's also getting $950,000 this year too, so.
That's a lot of change.
I was going through some of the the top 12 players and their money, and I forgot Kieran Foran was given a big paycheck to go there.
He was on big cash. He had 1 year at the Warriors, and just to sort of get his life back, you know, back on track, and to, you know, go back home and sort of see the family and stuff like that. And then Canterbury threw some big dollar bags at him.
Yeah.
And he just sort of hasn't. Well, that's, I mean, he's been hurt, and that's, you know, that's the way things go. But I think now that with a little bit more talent around, he could be, and he's getting into good form. He could be a very solid option to stay there at 5'8".
On the other side, but the I think Adam Dewey is just a revelation for them at fullback. I mean, for South, it was. I know they have a lot of fullbacks there and halves there, but it wouldn't have been the kind of player I would have let go. I think Adam Dewey is a phenomenal player.
No, he gets better every week. There's every now and then, you know, you see the glimpse of he's not quite, you know, a top tier fullback at the moment. Like, he'll get caught out of position. He doesn't get caught up in the line like Scott Drinkwater, but he just gets caught out of position a little bit.
Yeah.
He's not quite reading. Yeah, whether he just has. You know, just those lapses that you have throughout the game, and he's just not quite following it properly, and he gets caught out of position. But if they persevere with him, like he's 100% he's going to turn into a good fullback.
Well, that'll do it for this round of round 14. We'll move on to our studs and duds of the week. Did you have a stud there of the week?
Look, we'll go back to Thursday night, and it was Jerome Hughes.
Huge. Yeah.
For a small man, he was huge.
Yeah, he was huge. He was definitely huge. Mine's in the same game. It was just Addo Carr, just because, you know, it's rare to see, you know, he's a rare player for the fact of every time he touches the ball, you have no idea what he's going to do. But to get
he's a polarizing figure.
To get 9 tackle breaks in one game is ridiculous against the Roosters side. Like, it wasn't so much how much meters he gained. It's just every time he had the ball and he could break a tackle. From a winger's perspective, to have sort of that influence on a game is pretty good.
Yeah, no, that's right. And that's, you know, that just goes to show the quality of him. You know, Melbourne are going to be tested down the track over the next few weeks, with key personnel being out. Yeah. And it'll just be how they're going to sort of, I guess, roll on as the weeks coming up to the finals. Yeah, I can't wait to see how, you know, Cameron, Smith and Munster aren't too far away.
No, but I agree. You're right. Like, it depends. I mean,
Parramatta on Thursday night.
Well, yeah, and it's hard on Thursday night, so it's possible they still mightn't have Cameron Smith back, definitely not Munster, and they'll be without Vunivalu as well. So, and Finucane's gone for the season. So yeah, you're right. Interestingly enough, with Addo Carr, he now signed with Crown Management in Sydney for an agent. So he's dead set moving to Sydney. I mean, he's been saying it the whole time anyway. So he's even got he's come out and said that, and this is more of an agent sort of ploy to get him more money. He's come out and said, oh, I wouldn't mind trying like my hand at fullback. I think I could play at fullback.
That's right. To me, that's very smart.
Well, it's because, and the other thing is, a fullback's going to get more money than a winger. It's pretty cut and dry.
That's ridiculous too. Like, you know, money by position. Like, you know, if you're an influential player, then you should get paid what you should get paid. But
it happens in every sport, but
no, that's, sport. Yeah, exactly. But that's, I mean, if you're a game breaker though, like, you should still be able to have the ability to have a look at Josh Dugan. All he did was whinge and complain that he's a fullback. He's a fullback. I want fullback money. And yeah, you see, he's still running around in the centers. Like, he's just,
that's what they do. But it's because a 179 in this game is your most high paid position. It's just like any sport has it. A striker in football, you know, they get paid the big buck for big reasons. You know, the quarterback, the only one that's really actually...
If you're good enough, you can be a half a billion-dollar player, like, you know.
The only one that's really interesting that really doesn't follow that norm is basketball, if you think about it. You could be any position and still make a decent amount of money.
That's right.
Well, that's probably the only one. Yeah. Well, any position, I think. A point guard, yeah, any position.
No, that's right.
So... your dud of the week.
That's more of an influential type game where, yeah, if you're an influential player, then you'll absolutely you'll be getting paid.
And they do get paid.
They get paid.
Your dud of the week for this week.
Look, I think it's just something that's sort of creeping into the game, which I'm really not liking. It's the kicker being hit after the kick. Mm. They talk about, you know, a vulnerable player being hit. So that's about as vulnerable as you can get, you know, after a kick is sort of put up a bomb and they're in the air and they get clobbered and it's not as if the tackling player is letting them go. They're driving them down and holding them down. I don't like that either, but they've sort of brought in the rule this year where if you're an attacking player and you're being hit in the air, and even defensive players that are being hit in the air, it's a penalty. What's the difference here with your kickers being hit? I just don't like the precedence that's being set by referees that these kickers, they're in just as vulnerable position as what, you know, wingers and centers and the guys that are competing for the ball, they're just as in a vulnerable position, and they're getting clobbered and driven into the ground and held down. It's just refereeing is just been, especially in that regard, especially when they want to come in and say defenseless players. Well, that's about as defenseless as you can get.
I'd still even push it towards that. It's starting to creep in when the kicks are going up and then the wingers and all that. That's starting to creep into that. I've seen a couple of that last week's game where they let a couple of people you couldn't touch them when they were in the air before. They're still touching them and grabbing them on wingers and centers and all that. So that's starting to creep in. So I agree. I think they're more.
I think 9 times out of 10, you can pretty much judge when you look at a replay whether they're going for the ball or whether they got eyes for the ball or eyes for the player.
Yeah.
You know, it's still a bit of a gray area, but I think you can get that one fairly correct most of the time if you look at it on replay.
But my concern with it is that you can just have to tap an, if they're up in the air and like right above you and you just have to tap an ankle and then
that puts
off the player, they could land completely awkwardly on their neck, just like the halfback.
And it's lucky that they don't land that, or that nobody has landed like that. I think it was a couple of weeks ago where it might have been Josh Morris. And he got flipped up around. He just landed absolutely flush on his back and looked like he was 2.5 meters in the air. And it's like, oh my God, like that's what I mean. Like that sort of stuff. I get it. It's part of the game, but they've got to try and make the best way to try and, if they want to talk about, you know, player safety and things like that. And I get it. It's a collision sport, but things like that. Yeah. Like I said, I think 9 times out of 10, you can tell by replay, if they're going, if they've got genuine eyes for the ball, or if they're playing the man and they're trying to, you know, whether they get a sneaky penalty or, you know, the BS of people trying to, you know, run people off the ball and stuff like that, you know, with the escort penalties and stuff like that. There's some teams that are just horrendous at it. The kickers. Yeah, you know, they talk about the NFL protecting the quarterback. I get it. They're the important players of the game, but I just don't like the way that they're being clobbered whilst in the air. And I think that's about as a vulnerable position as you can get.
Yeah, no, I'd echo on the back of that done of the week. I think it's creeping into every kick on the halfback. And again, like I said, it's creeping into, you know, when the players are coming through and tackling, I suppose, in the air, because they are technically. So yeah, it's dangerous, because, you know, depending on if you've got like a huge, robust person, let's say like Tamalolo, they can run very fast and is just motoring through, and a halfback, all they're doing is kicking. They're not ready. They're not prepared to, I guess, feel the brunt of anything. It's a quarterback. Quarterback couldn't see anything.
It can go wrong.
Hugely wrong. So it's, I totally agree with that.
Yeah, it's just, like I said, it's just something that sort of, I think that's being forgotten a little bit now that they brought the rule in of, you know, whether you're a defending player or an attacking player, if you're hit in the air, then it's essentially a penalty straight up. And I think and everybody could say, oh, the poor old halfback. They're part of the lifeblood of the game. I know all positions are, but, you know, they're the guys that generally have the most influence on the game.
Oh, 100%. They are. That's any year that you could go back every year and then go 40, 50 years, halfback was always the position, and still is the position in the NRL. Way it is. It's possible that having that one ref too, that the having that other second ref that was there, they're probably missing that happening. They're probably not getting the right vision. Having that second referee there is probably hindering that a little bit.
Yeah, no, that's right. No, awesome.
Still dangerous.
I didn't really mind the two
dangerous
referees, to be honest.
It's obviously it's a pay thing. Clearly, it's a pay thing. You know, to cut my money back. But I always thought it was great. It was, I'd much rather have two referees and no bunker than one referee and one bunker. purely because of bunkers.
I think a lot of people would just. I would like the right decision. Yeah, you know, when it comes to the bunker and things like that, you want the right decision. Even if everybody gets frustrated and it takes a little bit longer than what they think it should.
That's true. Yeah.
You want the correct decision because you don't want the incorrect decision or the quintessential howler in a semi-final game, in a grand final.
Do you know what I mean? Like, costing
a team, a premiership or costing a team their season.
Well, that'll do it this week for round 14 of the NRL. Don't forget, always on Twitter, at Final Play Pod, and Facebook is Final Play Podcast, where especially on Facebook, you'll see a lot more of the up-to-date NRL news and happenings. You can get our podcast everywhere on Spotify, Podbean, Gimco. If you're on gimco.com.au, you'll be able to find it there. Pretty much everywhere except for one piece of fruit. But I'll
One overrated fruit.
I'm extremely close to working on that. But I'm getting there. That's it.
All right, have a good week, everybody. We'll reckon we'll be getting into some NBA action. The playoffs are upon us, so we'll be pumping out an NBA pod to sort of go through the NBA restart. And playoff matchups. So look out for that as well. That should be in the next couple of days. I can't wait for the playoffs. This is going to be one crazy, crazy playoffs. You know, no home court advantage,
no favorites. I would even go as much as I love my Lakers, I don't think they're the favorites because of the home court advantage. It's going to play huge differences. Plus the way they've been playing in the bubble, but we'll talk about that.
Well, no, all that too, and they're running into a bit of a red hot sort of Portland team as well, and I'll just say it from the bottom of my heart, and I could only assume all the people of New Orleans as well, Portland, you're welcome.
Portland, you're welcome. Well, we'll see. It's going to be very, very hard. For Lakers, I know we'll talk about it in another pod, but the Lakers are going to find it extremely hard. LeBron as much as LeBron is, but it's all come down to that person that was at the New Orleans Pelicans, AD. I think that's the key.
Well, that's the key.
I think
so. Yeah, Oil of Olay, AD.
Have a good week. My name's Jason. Oil of Olay, running scared that we're going to get play of the Blazers in the first round, Smith, because I said that to you in a text. I hope we don't play the Blazers, but
now it's come to. My name's Miles. You're welcome, Portland Plum.
You're welcome. I know we're going to talk about it later, but even Yusuf Nurkic, they are scarily coming into some good form.
Absolutely.
Oh, no. All right, have a good week, everyone.
I hear the concern in your voice.
Oh, mate, there's a huge concern. Look at their starting five. And Carmelo's coming into some form. A thin Carmelo.
That's right. Oh. All those Melo naysayers, don't disrespect the Melo.
To make sure Caruso's on his game. See you, everyone.
See ya.